The following is Christina Halverson and Carl Fast's talk, A Tale of Twin Cities, from the 2015 Information Architecture Summit.
So Carl and I are going to introduce each other. So this is Carl Fast, who I've only had the pleasure of meeting a couple of months ago, shortly after he returned to the Twin Cities. Carl is a longtime member of the IA community. As many of you know, this is his 14th consecutive summit. Yeah? Carl? Right. Carl helped build and expand the IA program at Kent State University and is now a recovering professor. He is on staff at Normative in Toronto, where he does all sorts of weird stuff and has no official title. So this is Carl.
And this is Christina. So as many of you know, she wrote Content Strategy for the Web, right? The Red Book, which is somewhat important. Yeah, somewhat important for the lives of many of you, and co-founded Brain Traffic, the leading content strategy firm. Should I say the?
One of.
And also runs Confab, which is the big content strategy event, and that is held here in the Twin Cities every year, right?
In just a few weeks. How much did you love Minneapolis? Enough to come back next month? Huh? No, actually, we're sold out now, so sorry, dudes.
Taunting.
Yeah.
I do taunt. Did not make me taunt you a second time.
So we wanted to talk a bit about a variety of things about information architecture, content strategy, and I wanted to start with a question because in 2009, I think it was, there was the Content Strategy Consortium, and that was a full-day workshop, and it was at the summit. Mm-hmm. And I had a student in the Information Architecture program at that time who came to the summit. It was his first time to the summit, and he came up to me after that day, and he said two things. The first was, I feel like I've really found a home here. I feel very comfortable here. This is my place. And then I asked him about the Content Strategy Consortium, and he said, it felt like a new field being born. That was what that day was, and you were there. I was not in that session. I felt like I really missed something important. And I just want to tell, how have things changed and evolved and grown in content strategy since that day?
Mm-hmm. I'll start just real quickly by saying that we started to find each other, content strategists, sort of via LinkedIn and Twitter in 2007, 2008, where we sort of started stalking each other. And so the IA Summit kindly opened up this idea for a consortium, and so I put forth this idea simply thinking, oh my god, maybe I can be in a room with other content strategists, this would be amazing, right? And we found 20 of them, and Karen McGrain and I helped facilitate it, and it was extraordinary. It really was like being in a room with other people who did what I did, and this idea of finding one's tribe absolutely resonated, and in fact, every year at Confab, that is one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we get. I have found my home, I have found my community, I have found my tribe. Because just like information architects did 10, 15 years ago, and frankly, as many of them still do, it can feel very isolating in an organization where the value of that discipline is just not recognized or understood. So since that time, Content Strategy for the Web was published shortly thereafter. Other books followed very, very quickly on the heels of that. The conversation continued to grow, honestly, largely fueled by connections on Twitter. Really, I mean, that was kind of where we found each other. And UX conferences, which in 2009, zero UX conferences, zero featured talks on content strategy, if you can believe it, you know, started to pick up, people speaking on it. And now it's kind of an established field that often gets conflated with content marketing, but that's another talk. That people everywhere are fighting for the title, just like we did with IA. Mm-hmm. And it still is a really exciting time.
Okay. How do you think the work has changed, though, as well?
That's an interesting question, and I definitely want to follow up because the work that started in IA, really since the Polar Bear book was released, when it kind of that gave, you know, definition and tools for the field. We started out talking about content strategy for websites for the simple reason that content was constantly getting the short shrift. All right. And
that's a content strategist speaking.
So you just don't be afraid to ask if you don't know. you know, and it was, I started talking about it, and I often joke that we were a community born of shared rage, and that we were being always called in the 11th hour when things were falling apart, right? Because the post-it notes, or the tech calendar, or the design, nobody was ever thinking about the actual content that filled those buckets. And so that is where the practice, you know, had sort of been born in the early 2000s and where we started to get attention, because in many ways that was the immediate pain point that everyone could relate to and that everyone can still relate to. And I think that what Brain Traffic has found over the last couple of years is that there's another side to content which has more to do with the publishing and the planning and the technical piece of it, which also obviously totally drives the success of that content. And that piece, especially the structured content piece, is very, very closely married to information architecture. Mm-hmm. And in fact, is I think what a lot of IAs do and have considered themselves owners of for many, many years. And it's been great to kind of partner with folks who consider metadata schema and taxonomies their home, right? So there is a crossover. Sorry, I said to Carl beforehand, I was like, let's each try to keep our answers to 3 to 4 minutes. And we were both just like, yes, that's what we'll do, and I know I'm already failing. So the two things that we're getting called for more are, we need structured content. Can you make structured content? Structured content is the magical thing that is going to save our organization and our technology. And then the other piece is the governance piece. We need governance. We need content to be consistent. We need everybody to stick to the taxonomy. We need everybody to be clear on their roles. So that are the two places where content strategists are starting to evolve, I think. So one of the things that I often have said, and that actually I've reached out to Lou Rosenfeld several times on, is that there have been points in the development of content strategy where I felt very strongly that we had a lot to learn from the trials and tribulations that the IA and UX communities suffered through, you know, the early and mid-2000s. So can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, I can try.
It's interesting. You've been here 14 years.
I have, although you got to understand, in that period, I was also doing the PhD thing. So I've sort of played, I've had an interesting sort of view of myself as having an unusual position within the IA community, as I'm a bit of the outsider in some ways, because I haven't been sitting there doing the work, sitting there wrestling with the taxonomies and those kinds of things. But I am here all the time. I talk to a lot of people in the professional community. I work with people. I'm married to an information architect. So I get that language all the time, and I really have always, let's just say, the university really didn't want me to do that, didn't feel that that was good, because you need to talk to other academics, but I find people in this room more interesting.
How do you really feel about academics, Carl?
Okay, I feel they're a lot more interesting. So as that outsider, or kind of an outsider, I have a slightly different perspective, and I hope that that's useful. So the way I think that there's been an interesting thing has been, IA kind of got caught up, I think, in a definitional, we want to, what is our role, a little bit of navel-gazing, a lot of stuff related specifically to interaction design. There's certainly, as some of you know very well, there were some frictions with those two communities over the years. But then we kind of got surprised by this idea of user experience, right? And user experience became what I just now think of as this unstoppable juggernaut, right? That is the word that everyone who does not do the work but needs the work done has attached themselves to. That's the word that they get. Uh-huh. You know, for me, the tipping point was a few years ago when Marissa Meyer was named the CEO of Yahoo. And the headline in the New York Times read, Marissa Meyer to improve user experience at Yahoo. And I could not imagine that headline saying, Marissa Meyer to improve information architecture at Yahoo.
Sure.
Or usability at Yahoo. And so that, for me, was, despite any misgivings I might have had about user experience as a term, because I like information architecture, it's a term that I personally identify with, just as you personally identify with content strategy, right? That's sort of my home. I was like, I got to buy into the whole UX thing regardless here, because that's sort of where the wedge in the conversation is. And I think so a lot of that evolution of IA in those periods had a lot to do with thinking of ourselves in relation to other fields and their growth and their acceptance in the places where we've been trying to get traction and get this work done, whether you're outside as a consultant or whether you're internal to the organization and trying to figure out what is my title, what is my role, how do I convince the organization to get this thing done.
You know, that's interesting because there's certainly 2009, 2010, and even now, that started to happen in the content strategy community, right? That's not content strategy. This is content strategy. And why are you messing up that term? And you're confusing everything, you know, around and around. And then Erin Cassane wrote a book called The Elements of Content Strategy. And one of the things that she said was content strategy is a big tent. And I have found that over the years, more and more of the community has really expanded to say, you know what, there are different areas where we need to strategically consider the content, right? Uh-huh. And I think that this is the blog post I was saying I've needed to write for 8 months since I sort of landed on this in my own head. I think that there are three areas in which we talk about content strategy. And I think maybe the same is true for information design, user experience, uh-huh. even the crossovers within information architecture and content strategy. And that is content strategy for user experience, right? Which is kind of where we started. I've got two content strategists up in the front row, so I keep going, right? Yeah? Can you nod or shake your hands, right? Okay, Richard's doing this, and I'm not sure what that means. So content strategy in website and, you know, beginning now in digital product design, sort of. Content strategy for content management, right? Which is more structured content taxonomy, making sure that the content can go. Uh-huh. And then content strategy in the enterprise, which frankly for me is more identifying and sustaining a publishing framework that has a focus on the end user experience and improving that and ensuring that business goals are always considered. So that in my mind are sort of the three areas where people have been gravitating and have been doing the work. I kind of don't care, and I think I said this in the book, I kind of don't care ultimately what you call it. I mean, if the term content strategy is gone in 10 years, I don't care as long as right. the work is getting done, right?
Well, I would call that kind of a, like, to me, that's the IA perspective about there's a label that gets attached to it, and while I personally have strong feelings about that label, the label that I like, ultimately what matters is the label that the user likes.
And I think that's the same within your organization,
yep.
right, or your clients.
Yep. And the label that seems to have won in the big picture here right now is user experience, because you see that with capital UX, but you also see it lowercase user experience as well. And I think as a phrase, you know, you read an article in the New Yorker talking about something, and they're not talking about what we do at all, but the phrase, you know, the user experience, or this has a good user experience,
that's
and
totally
all kinds of people,
strategy too,
right?
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And we're, to some extent, riding on the coattails of that. I mean, well, to a large extent. Mm-hmm. However, we also view ourselves, we have a more nuanced view, and it's a wedge into that conversation.
You know, and I think that that is fantastic. Karen McGrain wrote a book called Content Strategy for Mobile. And as far as she, that idea of having a practice or a benefit or identifying a need and using that specific thing as a wedge into a larger conversation, I think is very relevant there, because she essentially positioned mobile, you know, and digital and like proliferation of devices, you know, what you need for that is structured content, right?
Right.
Which the IA community has been talking about for 15 years,
right.
20 years. The TechCom community has been talking about it since the 80s. But here's a question I have for you though. As the IA community has continued to evolve and sort of navigate these mm-hmm. different, you know, names and terminologies and identities and sort of finding a home and user experience and so on, do you feel like what has benefited the community the most of practitioners? Well, I guess there's the core community of practitioners, and then there are the people who are talking about it and helping to sort of shape the conversation, mm-hmm. which, I mean, those can be a crossover. Do you find that the community has benefited more from identifying and talking about the problems that happen when you don't do it appropriately or invest in it or skimp on it versus the opportunities and benefits, you know, that really solid, good, thorough IA and all the weapons and tools that you bring to it can help organizations realize? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I understand your question, but I'm going to answer it in a very odd way, all right?
That shocks me.
Yes, I'm sure. Okay, so one of the things that struck me as we're talking here is when I think about coming to the IA Summit compared to other kinds of things, there's an interesting way in which this is just like going to some academic conferences and talking to academics, and that a lot of people I know here are deeply philosophical, I think, about the practice. We like to talk about abstractions and conceptualize things and draw relationships to those things. And when we get hung up on the label, mm-hmm. right, another way to do that is to say, okay, look, there is the label that the user understands, but how do we break this down? So let's stop talking top down, let's go bottom up, mm-hmm. right? And there are different concepts that we use that are really central. And when I started my master's in library and information science, you take a class, and many of you have gone through this class. It is the foundations of library and information science. Okay. And class number two is, what is information? And you walk in with this certain idea of what information is. I know it is basically this. You come up with some definition, and it is not data, and it is not knowledge, but they are related in these ways. And the professor sits there and says, I am going to unhorse you from your certainty, and by the end of this class, you will have no clue what information is. Right? And people sometimes, and this actually happened to me, the program where I was in, the classroom was down the hall from the grad club. So we finished class, and we walked down and had a drink. And on the way down, a guy said, I cannot believe this. I am in a graduate program, and the professor has just told me that the central concept in the field is, he doesn't know what it is. What am I doing here? And my argument back to him was, well, if you talk to a biologist and you say, what is life? They can give you a pat answer. But if you say, no, what is life? They will say, well, that is the question that drives biology. If you talk to a physicist and you say, what is matter or energy or time or space? They will say, we really don't know. Right? We thought we knew, sort of, and then Einstein comes along and says time and space, actually they're the same thing. We have this thing called space-time. So when I think about information architecture, I think about what are some of the fundamental concepts, like information. We talk about experience. We talk about interaction. With content strategy, I think one of the great things that has happened is you've introduced a word that we never had before, a really important concept, and that concept is governance. And what is that? We can give you an answer. But what we do is we constantly try to wrestle with those questions. And it's the wrestling with that and trying to come to a deeper understanding over time that I think is really having a big impact on shaping the field. And when I come here, these are a lot of the conversations that people are having. I heard some talks the other day. I heard like Marsha Haverty was talking about understanding and embodied cognition and going down and questioning those kinds of concepts that really drive us forward. And wrestling with it as opposed to saying, well, I read a book, I know what cognition is, I know what understanding is, and coming up with that bottom-up set of concepts and how they relate to each other and how they evolve. And I like the spirit of this community in terms of how we keep trying to do that, rather than saying, let's get the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree that the content strategy community absolutely shares that. I mean, that is, I was saying that to the brain traffic team the other day, that I think content strategy is like entrepreneurship, and did I say that right? Entrepreneurship, in that I'm just constantly going to be asking you guys, am I using these words correctly? In that you're never satisfied, right? You never are just like, oh, I got it, I figured it out. And I mean, right. I think it's the same thing. Things are changing so quickly that there is that innate curiosity. I often say you can't be a content strategist without being super curious. Now, that said, this idea of wrestling with the concepts the idea of, you know, what is information, what are we architecting? By the way, I want to encourage you guys to go and read Joe Gollner's work, G-O-L-L-N-E-R. He is a kind of content strategist by trade. He calls himself a content philosopher. He has some brilliant ideas and insight about the relationship between data and information and knowledge and content. So I really encourage you to go check that out. But what has happened, I have found in running Confab has been a great sort of testing ground for what's important to people who care about content and content strategy. What we hear over and over is, I am tired of talking about this. Mm-hmm. I know it's important. I need to know how to do it. I need to know what the tools right. and methods are. I need an idea of how to sell it in to my organization or client. I need to know how to evolve it and grow it over time. These are the questions that we continue to get asked. Now, having said that, too, what's cool is as the community continues to evolve and grow, and you guys have this too, right? Like, how many people is your first time here? Well, oh my God, did you guys look around? Look how awesome that is, right? But I think that because of this core community of people who's been coming for so long, we forget, and this stuff becomes so central to our identity and our day-to-day, we forget that there are a ton of people who are just now learning about IA and the tools that make it go, right? We take it for granted. Well, surely everybody knows this stuff. This is what I live and breathe every day. But that idea, ensuring that there are pragmatic, useful tools that can help us start doing the work is critical. And I think that the idea is, once people have sort of become masters at that, you find that there's more stuff to think about and more stuff to do. And then what is the place that we give them to go, right?
There's a strong, I think, analogy to religion here, if I can.
Carl, it is so early.
Oh, a lot of people at church, I know. But no, let me. If you go to church, okay, if you go to church, right, there is a deep question about, like, what is God? But at the end of the day, you just need to say, I'm going to wrestle with that to some extent, but I need to have faith, and that is what I need to do to be a believer. Like, you have to sit down and say, there's some element of wrestling with this kind of stuff, but there's an element where I just have to take it on faith and I have to do something, right, and act in that particular way. And where I was talking about some of those concepts, you were saying, right, I'm like, you need to wrestle with these concepts. We need to figure out, sometimes we need to add new concepts like governance and keep wrestling with that. But there comes a transition where you have to get the work done and you have to have a reasonable, acceptable thing. You cannot get hung up on all that.
Well, I think
you'll drive yourself into the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole field will get stuck.
For sure. And I think that it's a matter of ensuring that there are ways in which we can continue the conversation as we practice without devaluing the practice. I was saying to Carl, the first time I went to the ISM, it was in 2009, and somebody used the phrase wireframing monkeys. Like, wireframes have been commoditized, everybody can do wireframes. And I was so deeply offended by that because I couldn't do good wireframes, and I felt like it would really improve my abilities and my context, you know, in which I was working as a content strategist, to understand how to do those things. And this is, I think, what I really appreciate about the content strategy. And let me say this. We're talking about the content strategy community and the information architecture community. How many content strategists are in the room? Okay? There's no divide. Not really. It's like this, right? Mm-hmm. So in many ways, we're just talking about the label, and we're talking about the field and how the field has understood. But I don't know, Rahel Bailey had a fantastic quote very early on that she showed this slide, and it was like business analyst, information architect, editor, user experience designer, taxonomist, right? And she said, I've gone by all these titles, and I did content strategy, right? So I want to be clear about that. Now I completely forgot the direction I was going in.
But we're all in the same sort of space over here. We're not here and here, right? We're not worlds apart.
And we can't, oh, that's what I was going to say. And we can't be. And the idea of like battling over, there is a thing where if you're working on a project where there's a content strategist and an information architecture, those two people have to get together and talk about, okay, we're going to be side by side through the research and discovery phase. And then we're going to continue to collaborate over time with the designer and with the tech person, but we need to understand who's responsible for what deliverable or who, at the end of the day, gets the say in how we're going to move forward. And that's just division of role. That's where a racing chart comes in, for example. But what I was going to say is that what I love about content strategy and where I feel a real opportunity is that in many ways the content strategist, if you have that title, your role is to go around within a project team or within an organization because all that stuff comes in and shapes the content. Right? Mm-hmm. And that person's job in many ways is to connect the dots. And so we're connecting the dots between the important work that an IA practitioner is doing and between whatever, you know, the user experience lead and the visual designer and the tech team. And so in many ways you have to kind of know a little bit about a lot of things. But that's what I think is really cool about the field.
Okay. A comment that was made to me last year at the summit, because we're talking a lot about the internal change, right, and the evolution within the fields and the way we do things and how we see ourselves.
Yep.
I was talking with someone last year, and he made a little comment that has stuck with me quite a bit over the last 12 months, which was, he just said, you know what we are, regardless of whether you're content strategist or IA or you call yourself user experience designer or whatever, we are the change management people of the 21st century.
Yes.
Right? Right, that is ultimately what we're doing. Right? And I have tended to think about what we do in terms of the future and in terms of our role in society is to like design the future and the world we want to live in. I'm thinking of it very broad terms, right? Mm-hmm. But you've been doing stuff with brain traffic and you've got your company, you're doing the practice day to day, you're down in that, okay? So talk to us about that idea of the change management aspect of your work and how that has evolved or grown and some of the things that go on with that.
Totally. You know, that's funny because I don't know how many times that comes up. Everybody wants sessions where they want to talk about, I mean, the number one question that I get asked at conferences is, how can I convince my boss or my client that this is important? And that's change, right? Change management, right? So I think that, okay, what was the question?
When it comes to your work, we talked about evolution starting in, say, 2009 and growth
right.
from here.
Has it changed?
That has changed a lot. Has it gotten easier?
Great. Well, we're in a unique position at Brain Traffic, right, where when we switched over, and I will speak just from our perspective, we were a copywriting firm, right? We were a web copywriting firm. There were six of us, and that's what we did very successfully from, like, 2003 through to 2007. And it was early in 2008 that I was like, you know what we should do? We should be a content strategy firm. And I know this much about content strategy, and most of it has to do with how mad I am at my clients and how I think that they could do things better.
That's healthy.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's good. Much of my career has been fueled by rage. In fact, I said that my next book is going to be called, What is Wrong with You People?
I'll write, What is Right with You People, and then...
I'm not sure which one of us people are going to like better.
I don't know.
But I think that in that sense, we did have to sell it in. We had to say, we know that you've been coming to us for writing, but this filling in the blanks, filling in the lorem ipsum, is no longer working for us. We're tired and we're angry. We want to introduce this thing called content strategy to you and talk about how we might be this. And people were like, so that's strategist, like consulting? Forget it. And we lost every single one of our clients. Every single one of them. I'm not kidding you. Those were dark, dark days. And so we're scrambling doing like web writing in some different areas, you know, and trying to sell that over there. So then time went on, whatever. I started speaking in a bunch of conferences, really banging the drum. You know, the Brain Traffic name got out there. And so then people started calling us and asking for content strategy. And that was a watershed moment for Brain Traffic. What they wanted was content audits. They wanted messaging architecture. They wanted, we have a global sitemap, and we're realizing that the deeper down we dig, we don't know what to do. And I will also say that 90% of those projects were rescue missions, right? So we were being called in at the 11th hour when, I will also say, almost all the budget had been spent to, like, fix things. So now, again, we're in a unique position in that we get a bunch of inbound leads. I would say that 50% of those are for the user experience piece of content strategy, right? 25% of them are, we need structured content, how can you help us? And the other 25% are, I have a company of 100,000 people and 50 million different locations, how can I get them all to create content that makes sense together, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we didn't get those last two for years. And so the idea that structured content has become such a focus for so many organizations, and also that people are understanding and realizing what governance means, which for me is, you know, production, like content production or an editorial question. Mm-hmm. That's what has really changed for us. I also want to say, I realize I'm throwing out a bunch of resources. Lisa Welchman is really the one that introduced the term web governance, right? And she has an amazing book that has finally, after years, come out of me waiting for it. Not years of waiting for her, just for the book, called Managing Chaos. Rosenfeld Media published it, and it has, like, changed my life. So that book is all about governance, structure, and governance, and so on. Do we want to take questions?
Yes.
We've been chatting for about a half an hour.
Yeah.
We're going for another half hour, right?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, so we have someone with a microphone who will come around, and, oh, yeah, Lou, right off the bat here. Very good.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for the plug, by the way. It's on sale today, Managing Chaos. But anyway, so...
Do I get my cut later? We talked about that.
Yeah, no, I know. So, you know, just listening to the two of you, I know you both so well, and so I'm not surprised that there wasn't friction, but I was thinking, well, this is really kind of kumbaya and all that. And then I started to think, well, what would the friction be between the fields? I'm not trying to make controversy where there isn't, but... We've certainly seen this before to some degree with, let's say, interaction design and IA. Why are we all getting along so well, or are you really just covering up some deep, dark, dirty secrets that we don't know about?
The rage I feel towards the IA
community. Rage, right. What is your rage?
As far as I'm concerned, I mean, content strategy was kind of born at the IA summit. Like, there is a reason that we work hand in hand. There is a reason that we are so excited about and supportive of each other's work, and that is that we are trying to deliver content in a way that is meaningful to our user and to our audience, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we want. We want to help whoever needs to communicate or whoever requires information or problem solving or entertainment or whatever. We want to connect those things and create meaning. Again, like, I don't care what you call it. Like, we just want to get the work done, right? So if I need to bring somebody in and they're like, you know, can you give us an information architect for blah, blah, blah? Like, so what if I call in somebody that identifies as a content strategist? I mean, content strategist, do you care? Anybody? You can come tell me later in secret. Right? I mean, we share the same values. We share the same goal. And frankly, I think that it, I don't know. I mean, I hear from people who email and they're like, you know, these very emotional emails. I've been fighting for the title of content strategist in my organization for a year and a half, and I finally have a business card, and here's a picture of it, and, you know, I'm so excited or whatever, and which is great. But again, I think that those folks are moving from copywriter to content strategist, right? There's more of a value, I think, now within organizations, which is amazing, of an information architect or user experience designer. So I don't know. Do you hate content strategists?
No, Okay. I look at it in terms of what I'm deeply interested in, and to be honest, I'm not deeply interested in content strategy. It's not work that I personally want to do.
Rude.
Okay. Right. What I am interested in is how content strategy, information architecture, interaction design, this whole grand enterprise of all these people who are clustered over here and not over here and over there, et cetera, are all here, and the big impact that we are having. When I started at Kent State, I get to my office, and I'm like, oh, who has the office that's next to me? And so the one person next to me is Dave Robbins, the other faculty member who helped build the UX program there. And the person next to me on the other side is a public relations and marketing person. Now, pause for a moment on that. This is in the School of Library and Information Science at a publicly funded university, publicly funded, and we have a full-time marketing and public relations person. And the weird thing is, nobody thought that was weird.
I don't think that's weird.
But if I said, we need a full-time student experience designer,
right,
they can't even think that that's weird because they have no idea what that means.
Right.
But in 1920, or 1930, or 1970, or 1990, the idea of a full-time public relations and marketing person in that school, that was weird. That was inconceivable. At best, that was at the university level. So this is the grand enterprise that we are all invested in, trying to get to the point where we're like, wow, we wish we were in the Mad Men era. We wish that as a field we had gotten to that point. We're still a long ways from being that successful and having that kind of impact where everyone assumes you're starting a new business today, right? Are you going to have a marketing department? Yes. Are you going to have people who do this? Well, maybe. It's more likely today, but in 30 years from now, we want that, or hopefully sooner, we want that answer to be, of course.
And you know, I realize now we don't have until 11, we only have till 10:45, so I'll hit this real quickly. I think I have a client right now. They do help content for a huge credit card company. That's what they do. They manage the help and technical content. And their new VP of customer experience, like they have a new VP, and the VP title it's new is customer experience. And he's like all about improving the customer experience, right? And the tech comm team or the help content team is like, you know what would improve the customer experience is fixing the damn help content. Because people hate the content, and so why don't you give us some money to help fix the content, right? No, that's not how people think about customer experience. Customer experience typically sits in marketing, and they're thinking about how they can improve the customer experience bringing those people on. Yeah. And so I think that in many ways, user experience people, that we can go and say, here are the values that we operate under, here are the problems that we can solve. This is all stuff that feeds into and is, you know, integral with the customer experience, but they don't get that yet. Customer experience is still sort of this floaty term that sounds really cool. So I think that being able to bring those two terms together will help everybody in the UX community.
Yeah, and friction, I think, is really an interesting phrase that you use, Lou, because friction I tend to think of as, well, we're fighting, and you get this sense of, like, well, who's going to come out on top? Right? Who's going to win this? But I think friction is useful in another way, and this is the way that it's useful in terms of what are we really doing? What are the concepts? How do we do this? What is the best way to do this? And we're all working on that together, and that kind of friction is necessary and valuable. It can be really healthy. But when it's fighting, we're going to dominate, we're going to win, that's when it's a problem.
Yep.
And I haven't seen that right now. And so that's sort of my answer to that question.
Yep. All right, another question.
First, I'm a student from Dr. Fast, and I wanted to say thank you. I graduated from Kent State. But as I'm working in the field now, I find it very difficult when I go to apply for a job. What title do I use? You know, because depending on the job, I have to cater, am I a content strategist? Am I a user experience designer? Am I an information architect? And at one point, I put all of them on, and then I realized it was too long. So how do you, what suggestions do you have in terms of defining ourselves?
Whatever job you're applying for, list that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you've got an electronic resume, just change it. I'm not kidding. I mean, that's, I came up from editorial, marketing, sales, PR, and I would basically just, like, whatever job I was applying for, if I was qualified and I could do the work, I'd put that title on there, right? Now, having said that, how I self-identify with my work is not as important. I know for some people it's very important, and I don't want to diminish the importance of that. But if you're looking for work, you know.
I think there's two elements there. There's one is, what is my identity, myself, that I am constructing for myself? And then what is the identity that I need to present to the world in various contexts and situations? And I think you need to be conscious of those too. And in some cases, like when you're applying for different types of jobs or you're explaining yourself within an organization, you need to think about what is the identity that I'm going to project out and construct. And think of that construction as an active and deliberate process.
That is so much better than what I said.
Well, I'm thinking a lot about identity because I was a professor, and there's something about being a professor that society is, you know, it's like if you meet the president, even if you never voted for the president, that particular person, if they're like, that's a role.
Is that like a hint? I don't understand.
Right, there's a role and identity that goes along with that, and professor is something that society foists it upon you. And so I've been in this process of like sort of unhorsing myself from that identity and trying to think about a new one and my new role at Normative as it evolves. And so I've been really consciously aware about that idea, that distinction between my own identity for myself and deliberately constructing and thinking about that in relation to the other people around me and how that will help me facilitate the work I'm trying to achieve.
Yep. Did that help? Great. Okay, we've got 5 minutes.
Hi, I'm Joy. Working for Delta Airlines right now. I heard about a conversation about how IA and user experience
Can you hold the mic up closer?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, much better.
Yes, the relationship between IA and user experience. Something comes to mind, and I have been actually reflecting on that. The elements of user experience model by Jesse James Garrett. Mm-hmm. When I first saw it sometime, maybe 5 years ago, I was quite impressed. But as I reflected on it over time, I feel, and this is just a, this is a conversation, right? So, and I'm not saying I'm right, I don't know, right?
It's okay,
I feel like the IA piece is not represented correctly in that diagram by Jesse James Garrett. I know he's here, like, please forgive me, like, I don't know if I say something like terrible at this point. High risk. I just want to be, just a dialogue, right? Because I thought about it and I realized that IA piece is not in the right position because IA isn't like a square little, and interaction design also isn't, shouldn't be like a little thing there. I feel like the whole diagram is not, of course all models are not perfect, right? It's just a representation.
Well, where but, do you think IA should be?
It's something that we can discuss, right? But I don't want to give a solution right now, but I just feel like that diagram doesn't represent IA properly. And also, of course, the other pieces, maybe even content or interaction design or whatever the other pieces are, right? I'm a novice myself. So anyway, and sometimes these diagrams, when they get distributed, you know, it can, for people who are still, you know, learning in this, all learning in this field, right? It can, I'm just making it.
Yeah. So I just real quickly, I didn't mean to put you on the spot when saying, where do you think it should sit? I just want to, you have ideas or you have questions, never apologize for them.
Thank you.
Sam, right? Especially, this is such a safe
community. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. So that's why I was like, well, tell me where you think it should sit, not because I was calling you out, because I want to know. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, that was one of the first places I started with content strategy, saying like, where is content? I don't see content, Jesse. And so, but you're right. It's not about that model, right? It's about a model. But I don't think that we can start a conversation about a practice or solving problems without some framework in which to, that we can either relate or shape our conversation. And, you know, you look at content strategy, type in content strategy framework or content strategy diagram, and Google will return a gajillion different things, right? So, you know, that came out in 2000, and it was huge in shaping the user experience community, but we are all curious people, we're pragmatic, we want to evolve, and so the diagram has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that diagram, I agree.
So, my two things are, one, that...
Evolution.
Luke Rablewski has a webpage where he collected a whole bunch of different diagrams about user experience and related fields, and these are these conceptual models that try to tie all of these things together, and Jesse's is one of them.
Yep.
And if you look at all of them, what they do is they reflect all of the different kinds of thinking that people from different backgrounds and different experiences with different interests, and this is my mental model projected out into the world of how all these things fit together, and it's a fascinating collection to look at to see how different people conceptualize it. And I think the second thing is that that relates to the comments we had earlier about wrestling with the different kinds of concepts, the friction that we have, the healthy friction, and how this is a critical and necessary part. So when you look at that diagram and you say, I think IA is in the wrong place or not properly represented, I say, yes, right? And your job and the job with the people that you work with and in the larger community, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's coming and presenting or doing, is to continue that and talk to people about it and do that wrestling and create that friction around it to evolve that, to grow that, to understand it. Because this is how the understanding happens.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't happen by, I have received the wisdom from on high. Right? Right? I have worked through it.
And that takes bravery, right? It takes courage. I think the one other thing I would say is with any framework, with any model, with any definition, don't become emotionally attached to it. I mean, the number of times I put forth this definition that was in part, you know, tested out and shaped by the Content Strategy Consortium about content strategy, like what it was, because I wanted an elevator pitch. And the number of people that have come back and said, that's not what it is, or I'm going to evolve this, and I'm going to say that, and you're wrong. Like, if I were emotionally attached to that definition, I'd be a disaster. I'd be more of a disaster. You know, or the framework that we introduced, content strategy, you know, substance, structure, workflow, governance. Is it perfect? No. Does it help start and frame the conversation? Oh, yeah, it sure does. Yeah. If people change it or if they say it's wrong, I'm just not that emotionally attached to it. So whatever model or approach or methodology, don't fall in love with it because it will shut you down as a thinker and a professional, and it will hinder you in your career and your personal growth over time. That's my final blah, blah, blah.
So my final bit. You talked about emotion, right? And we previously talked about like the abstract philosophical stuff. I think that the emotional piece is something that one does need to have. If I was to say, and I would say this to students, if there was a book written before 1990 that everyone who does this kind of work, whether in this room or come to the IA Summit or not, or come to Confab or not, should probably still read or feel guilty about not reading, that would be The Design of Everyday Things. Okay? Because it's had a huge influence, it's still important. And I would teach that book, and I would say, okay, week one, just read chapter one. And then I say, they would come back into the room, and I say, okay, so why did Donald Norman write the book? And they would say, well, that is because he was a cognitive psychologist who had done various empirical studies and had thought that he had discovered some useful knowledge and concepts that he wanted to share that would perhaps make the world a better place, and that that was relevant for the design of everyday things. And I would say, no, he wrote the book because he was really pissed off.
See? See?
Go back and read that first chapter. He's sitting there, I can't believe it. I went into this, like, I go to London, I can't turn on the shower. What the hell? I walked into a door and broke my nose. What the hell? Right? And it drove that. But that tone, that's really important for setting the stage for certain types of things, but you need to control that too.
Agreed.
Right?
High five.
Okay.
We're done.
Let's give it up for Christina Halvorsen and Carl Fast.
If you enjoyed this podcast from the 2015 IA Summit, subscribe and check out the full collection at library.iasummit.org and on iTunes. The 2015 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by the UIE All You Can Learn Library. The All You Can Learn Library will give you the skills and techniques you need for a competitive design advantage with 24/7 access to experts and UX topics. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thanks for listening.